Fascinating hour. Les Leopold with us. We're going to take your calls this hour. I do want to get his thoughts on the pressure cooker. What's going to happen when we come back? Welcome back. Les Leopold with us. We'll get to your calls in just a second here. And Les's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Les, the pressure cooker theory, as it builds and builds and builds, and you and I both believe it is building, what happens when it really blows?
Well, that's just a terrific question. I've had a chance to get invited to do workshops all around the country, from 100 people to 1,000 people. So I'm hearing a lot from, these are everyday working people, I'm hearing this, what you're describing, this anger, this frustration. But what I'm also noticing is that people don't have a real coherent picture of what's going on. Everything is kind of fractured in their minds. There's a problem here, there's a problem there, but they don't have a common thread to it. So if we don't do anything, it's likely that we'll get, lashing out at immigrants or, people who are different from us, and, these kinds of negative things that could happen. But I believe that it's possible to build a positive, progressive, populist movement. I don't think populism is a bad name. It means people involved. The way the populist movement did it back in the late 1800s. It was a reaction against Wall Street domination of the economy. There was no Federal Reserve. Wall Street was it. And they were controlling the money supply and everything else, and they were squeezing these farmers terribly, and they fought back. But they did it in an organized way. The interesting thing about the populist movement, in the 1880s, they fielded 6,000 educators. 6,000. We would need 30-something thousand, given the population size now, if we wanted to have the same kind of educational impact. They went around and they basically sang the same tune. They helped people understand how the economy was structured and why they had to come together to try to do something about it. And actually, they got a lot done. Eventually, much of their platform became the common sense of America, of how to control runaway banks and things like that, and the Bank of North Dakota came out of it. But we would need to build something like that. I have a lot of faith in the American people that if you give them the space in an educational program to discuss this stuff, we don't lecture people. We have a lot of discussions, and then we share information with them.
Sure.
They really come around. And they would want to build something that's positive. So at the end of every these workshops I do, I go, well, how many people here want to be trained, become an economics educator, like one of those people in the populist movement from way back when? About 95% of the people volunteer. It's remarkable. People want to do something positive. So the hope I have is that an organization forms where we can do this education, and that it could build an infrastructure of a positive, progressive, populist movement to take our country back from Wall Street and bring more democracy back to our country, so we don't feel like the government is not responsive to us. Because, and this is one more factoid for you, there's a recent study done by two Princeton political scientists, and it confirms what the American people feel. They looked at 1,700 pieces of legislation in Congress, and they did this model about what influence, who had the influence. Turned out that special interest groups and the wealthy always got their way. The average person almost never got any legislation that he or she wanted, unless it was something that elites wanted as well. So people feel the government's gotten away from them. We got to take the government back, and the way to do that is through a positive platform, positive engagement, and lots of education. So, we're asking people all over the country to volunteer, and we're setting up train-the-trainer operations. And this book is designed, has, discussion questions at the end of every chapter, so that people could have their own, book clubs, reading groups, they can educate themselves. And I think, look, I'm getting on in years, not that old, but, I don't know if I'm going to live, 40 years to see this thing grow. It's going to take some time.
Be nice to see it.
It feels real positive to me, George. And I've listened to you for a long time, and you've been trying to send a positive message
yes,
forward.
Yes, absolutely.
Well. And I think if a bunch of us, you know, start pulling down, you know, heading in the same direction, something good can happen. It won't happen overnight, though. The one problem we have is we're an impatient people. You know,
we're not like the Chinese, where they can sit back and wait.
Yeah, and I don't want us to sit still, but I want us to recognize, like, for example, Occupy Wall Street happened. It was a six-month phenomenon. It actually did something very interesting. It changed the conversation in the country. All of a sudden, we were talking about we are the 99% and all that. That wasn't in the lexicon before. Politicians had to kind of begin to talk that way. But it wasn't well organized. It was like, if we just come out here on the street and do this, the world will change. And that's what the Arab Spring thought would happen. But, you know, spontaneous combustion doesn't really work. You need to build something to show the test of time. And all the great things we've done in this country really have required a lot of hard work, a lot of effort, and it takes time to see the results. And I'm hoping that there are a lot of younger Americans listening here and some older ones that can begin to put the pieces together, the infrastructure we need to build something like this. And what I'm hoping to contribute is part of the educational infrastructure. And I'm hoping shows like this, they're perfect for helping to get the word out. And, you know, we greatly appreciate that opportunity.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to the phones. They are lining up for you, Les. Let's pick it up by going to OJ, truck driving in California. OJ, you're up with us. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, I just wanted to kind of give you my synopsis of what's going on with me and my observations.
Sure.
I am one of the fed up guys. I'm fed up. I used to do security. I was literally in charge of security at a FedEx facility. I made about $26,000 a year. And I worked 7 days a week, 15-hour days. And, you know, so I never saw my family. So I went to trucking. I now make about $60,000 a year. I'm home more frequently, and I still have no money. My mortgage and my car insurance totals monthly about $650, and then with our power bill, let's say $750. Health insurance for just me, my wife, and one kid is $750 a month.
Wow!
And we have we've searched. We're in Florida. We have searched Florida Blue. We've searched Kids Care. I make too much money, so they have to charge me this, charge me that. I literally can't take my wife and kid out to the movies, but I make this money, but I still can't afford anything. My daughter, she had to get some cavities filled in because of the heart medicine that she's taking actually caused the cavities. And the dentist said, sure, we want $3,000 up front, plus whatever the hospital's going to charge you. It was cheaper for us, because my wife's from Nicaragua, to fly to Nicaragua. It was like a $600 round trip. And they only spent $300 fixing her teeth. It was cheaper to fly to Nicaragua, take a week off, come back, and her teeth were fixed than it was to have it done here in America.
Amazing.
Not only that, but we had to pull our daughter out of school because we put her in a daycare preschool. They actually said they're dumbing it down, that the state standards dumbed it down. And my daughter already knows the stuff that they were teaching her, so we withdrew her because we don't want her, she gets bored, learn the same thing over and over again. Not only that, but I knew my wife for a while from Nicaragua. Her cousins come over. They graduated high school. Coming from junior high in Nicaragua, they have more education than a high schooler here. They all graduated high school around 14, 15 years old. They just took the test, got their GED and diploma, and they were able to, you know, the education system here in the U.S., I wouldn't even call it one. So I can guarantee. It's sad. I don't know what to do.
OJ, if I could, George.
Yeah, please.
OJ is just laying out the picture we've just been describing.
Yes, all across the country.
He's working harder and harder and harder. He's dealing with a crumbling infrastructure, the educational system, healthcare system, because it's being starved by runaway inequality. Let me point out.
And he's making 2.5 times the money he was making before, and he still can't pay his bills or his breaking.
Let me share with you a picture of what's happening. I joke with people in my workshops of saying there's one chart in the book that's going to be on your final exam. And what it shows is productivity in the United States since 1947 to today, which is the amount we produce, the amount OJ produces per hour of work. And he's gotten more and more and more efficient. The trucks are better. He works harder. And we now produce three times as much per hour of labor than we did in 1947. It's a very interesting measure. There's also a measure of the average weekly wage. Well, from 1947 to about 1975, when productivity went up, so did the average weekly wage in terms of real buying power, not, you know, just the nominal money, but real buying power after inflation. They were in lockstep. When I was in graduate school, they told us it was an iron law. They had to go up together. Well, lo and behold, I graduated, and they repealed the law. Because since the mid-1970s, productivity has shot up, and the average weekly wage has gone down a little bit and stayed flat in terms of its buying power. So that means, now catch this, if we still got productivity tied to wages, as it was during the post-World War II period, instead of it all going to the super rich, if it was still tied, OJ's pay would be double what it is now. The average American pay would be double.
And he'd be buying more goods and services, wouldn't he?
Well, he'd have a decent life. He's working his butt off. Why shouldn't he have a decent life? Imagine this, you know, the fast food worker making $9 an hour. How's that person going to raise a family?
Well, and you know, Les, all people want is just to be comfortable and happy. Okay? You don't have to have a lot. You don't have to have 90 cars. You know, you just have to have a nice place to live. And to me, a nice place is where you're comfortable. It could be a little apartment, could
Absolutely.
Be a mobile home. Who cares? It's got to be something you like. You know, and maybe you have a nice stereo and a nice television and a great radio. Got to have a great radio. And, maybe you're into sports, so you do a little bit of that, or you want to take your family out to dinner. People just want to be left alone and have a comfort factor. That's all they want.
And they can't get it if the top CEOs are making 844 times what OJ's making.
No. How much money do you have to make?
It's ridiculous. And that's why that pressure cooker is happening. People like OJ deserve a better life. Given how hard he's working, he deserves a better life. And the only way to get it is we're going to have to do something about runaway inequality. And I'm so glad he called.
I've got a friend in Hawaii. She's got to be one of the smartest financial people I know. That's very costly in Hawaii. But, I mean, she knows how to stretch a dollar. She knows what to do with it. She knows how to invest it. And she's very smart about that. How many people aren't smart about that?
Well, you know, there's some scary numbers out there, George, that there aren't that many people that have the disposable income to invest. You know, there are more people like OJ that are basically just making ends meet. He's got no extra money to invest to be smart about. I'll bet you he's really frugal and smart about what he's doing. And, you know, he's the majority of the country. You have to get up there a ways to have any disposable income that you can save and invest. Are people smart about doing that? Well, it depends a lot on the rules and regulations. If we keep deregulating Wall Street, it's kind of hard to be smart about that because it's easy to be taken. We saw what happened during the mortgage crisis, and we see what happens with credit cards. People can get unsmart in a hurry, but, you know, they don't do it to be frivolous. They're doing it to try, you know, you said it perfectly, George. People just want a comfortable way of life, not extravagant. They work hard, and they want to look, he wants to take care of his daughter. He wants to have, you know, she needs good health care. It ought to be a right, not a privilege. He ought not to have to stay up at night and worry about that kind of thing. Yeah. And I think we can get there. We're the richest country in the history of the world. Why can't we get there?
Government should be helping people as much as it can. You know, I'm a strong believer in helping people socially, but they've got to be able to work for themselves and help and stuff. I mean, I would give people subsidies and checks to help them and subsidies as long as they were providing help, working, cleaning up. Maybe they were sweeping in the streets. I don't care what it is.
Well, George, is a very interesting statistic that I just ran across recently, and it shows there's this perception that somehow maybe some minority people don't want to work as hard as others. Well, it turns out that the people who are most actively seeking work when they're unemployed, who are most out there knocking on doors trying to find work, turn out to be African-American women and African-American men.
Yeah.
They're the ones most hungry for work. So I agree with you. I think the perception that we're slothful people is wrong. I think people want to work. I think they want to go out there and work hard. But they want dignity.
They want to be rewarded with something, and they want to know that there's a little light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely.
Let's go to Harry in Port Huron, Michigan. Harry, you're on with Les Leopold. Go ahead.
Thank God I got through tonight, guys. Thank you so much.
Sure thing,
for this.
My
Hopefully
friend.
We're going to help a lot of people. Three things for you, Les. I want to see what you think of the ideas. Number one, we got to get the minimum wage up to $20 an hour. Starting in 2017, it started in 1938 at 25 cents an hour. We're not keeping up with that. We're 50 years behind. Secondly, get rid of the tax system we have now, the income tax, the payroll tax, have the fair tax, the national sales tax. More businesses will start. More people have money in their pockets. And the third thing is get rid of debts. I loved O.J.'s call, as you did. He talked about having a debt of a mortgage. Why don't we get rid of mortgages in the future, and people will give money that they actually have, whatever, how big or little, to buy a house, and they'll own it. And plus, these, as you said, the debt situation, let's have turn these loans into grants so kids come out of school with no debt. So I want to see what you think about those three ideas.
Wow. Well, you've done some thinking here. The $20 an hour minimum wage is interesting because we did some comparison shopping about McDonald's workers. You know, New York City, they're making $8, $9 an hour. In Denmark, they make $20 an hour. Same company, same product. And New York New York cost of living is higher than most of Denmark. So $20 an hour is a good goal. You know, the right now the what a lot of people are struggling for is the $15 an hour wage, which I think is in reach. And I think the $20 one, I agree with you. And it needs to be indexed to inflation so it doesn't disappear on us again. We got to pull up the bottom. I mean, nobody can live in New York City on $9 an hour, and I doubt they can do it on $15. So your $20 is a good idea. Your tax plan is a more difficult one because the money, we have to get the money that's offshore. We're talking about
billions.
Estimated 21 trillion.
Trillions.
Between corporate and individual money. 21 trillion.
Oh, my God.
You know, that productivity dividend that was robbed for us for the last 40 years, that adds up to a lot of money every year. That's like trillions of dollars every year of money that should have gone to working people and has gone to the, to the elites, the financial elites. We have to get that money back, and the best. See, I would challenge the caller to say, "Hey, think about that financial transaction tax, because that would take a lot of the burden off the individual taxpayer, generate a lot of money." As George immediately recognized the second I said it, you came out with, "Whoa, that's going to generate a lot of money." You understood that. The debt thing is interesting because it's funny that you mentioned that, because a lot of people said during the crisis of 2007, 2008, well, if you're going to bail somebody out, bail out the people who are struggling with their mortgages, who saw the value of their homes collapse, and now they're stuck with this mortgage. They're underwater. The mortgage is worth more than the house. Why are we bailing out the big banks? Why don't we bail out the homeowners? So I think there's something to be said for that. But obviously, free tuition would make a huge difference.
Les, we're going to come back and take some final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Winfrey joins us. We're going to be talking about some incredible ways of communicating with the higher powers, so make sure you're part of that program. And, of course, we will come back in a moment with Les Leopold and take final phone calls as we talk about his work, Runaway Inequality. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Les Leopold with us. This is our final segment. We'll get to your calls here in a second. Les, one of my passions, of course, supporting as much as we can, of course, our police and fire departments, first responders, and people like that. What's the economy doing for folks like that? I mean, do we have enough of them out there? I mean, we're constantly concerned about terrorism and things like that. Where do we stand with them?
Yeah, excuse me. They're being squeezed. Because we have runaway inequality, we have downward pressure on tax revenues from the super rich who don't who move their money offshore and large corporations who move their money offshore. So we don't have the revenues that we should have for a vibrant public sector. Our teachers, our firemen, our police need to be adequately paid. What do you hear now? You hear, there's a pension crisis in Illinois or New Jersey where they come up with some, policeman that's, getting a $100,000 pension. Well, their average pension is very modest. And people need their pension. You're not going to, how are you going to lead a decent life just off Social Security?
You can't. And then the people who are able to make a living with just Social Security, unbelievable. I mean, I applaud them.
God, more power to them. So we need to bring that revenue back into the country, not by giving them breaks, but by that financial transaction tax, by making sure, a proposal that's kicking around is that maybe we tax heavily any corporate executive that goes above 45-1 in terms of the pay ratio between his pay and the average worker in his company. Maybe that's something we have to consider. But we need revenues to come to local, state, and even federal government, but especially state and local government, because that's where we really feel the squeeze. That's where the infrastructure. I mean, look, what you don't want is an adequate number of, shut down firehouses, and then, your house burns down because the person doesn't get there fast enough, and these people risk their lives. And, they deserve to retire in dignity. And, again, had the productivity that we all earned all the way through the 1970s, had we got the same share since then, everybody's wage would be double. The average weekly wage would be double.
Yeah.
What it is today. That's how far behind we are because of runaway inequality. And I'm hoping to get to some of the police and fire associations with our runaway inequality education program and have them get the book to them so they have an opportunity to see the facts and figures themselves. American people are smart, shrewd. If you give them information, they know what's BS and they know what's real. And everything we have in this book is footnoted, solid, rock solid. They look at it, they're going to go, I want to share this with other people. I want to get this information out. So, you're onto something there, George.
All right, here we go. Let's go to New York now. Mayotte is with us. Hey, Mayotte, go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Excellent show, as usual, and great callers. Les, I hope you have your pen out for my three-parter or so. First, I'd like to know what Webster Tarpley refers to as the Tobin tax to Wall Street, and maybe you might want to explain a little bit as to how that came about and what's happening when, because it's an actual tax that Wall Street sends to Albany and to Cuomo, and somehow it's rebated to them. So how can we put in place, what is the process to put that in place so that that will stick? Okay, next I want to know about, it's a great title, Runaway Inequality. I want to know if you cover in the book, because you started talking about the prison system, 4% of the population, and the U.S. is now a police state with 25% of the prison population on the planet. And it's after the civil rights movement, it targeted blacks. So you mentioned about how they are scrambling for jobs, and go into how Alexander explains about the caste system, how you're excluded from jobs and housing. And lastly, in Missouri, it came out more recently, and other places around the country, after the 2008 crash, a system was set up with all these court districts so that mostly poor black folks would be targeted for traffic fines, and then a debtor's prison came up if they couldn't afford the fine or the fines for the jail. And it's a situation where there is a lawsuit because people will be incited for made-up charges like sitting in your car in your driveway with a suspended license that they created in the first place. And if you have my questions, I'll listen for your ideas and your responses. Thank you, George.
All right, you got it. Want to handle a couple of those there, Les?
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. I'm wondering if she already read the book. James Tobin, Professor James Tobin, Yale University, came up with the idea of it's called the Tobin tax. It's exactly that financial transaction tax that I spoke of. So it's exactly the same thing. So that's the first one there. It's just another name. It was he came up with it in the 1970s. Second thing, there is a tax that we have to get rid of. I mean, a loophole called the carried interest loophole that basically only applies to the richest of the rich hedge funds and private equity companies, where they get to pay their regular income as if it were capital gains, so they're saving 19% of their income. That would make $5 to $10 billion extra, and it would be a huge difference in New York State because there's so much finance there. So let's deal with that one. Yes, there are a couple of chapters, a whole chapter on the prison population and how it's color-coded. So there's two chapters on that in the book. The last one you mentioned, though, is that's what made me think you read the book, because I was trying to understand what happened in Ferguson, Missouri, when Michael Brown was killed. What was going on there? Why was there so much tension between the police and the population? Well, there's a chart in the book that shows the percent of revenues in Ferguson, and this applies to also 20 counties around St. Louis, the percent that came from fines and forfeitures from low-income people. And it was a fairly low percentage until the crash of 2007-2008, and a local government got squeezed. Wealthy people weren't paying their taxes, corporations weren't paying their taxes, and what they did is they deliberately went after low-income people, who were primarily people of color in Ferguson, to raise the revenue. So it went like from 7% to 14% of all the local revenues came from these squeezing low-income people. Now, there's a Justice Department report that spells all this out. We don't even know the extent of this across the country. But it's really, when you think about it, I'm not defending or I'm not attacking the police in this situation, but I'm saying the following. If we're asking our police to generate revenue from poor people, we're putting everybody in harm's way. That's just not what the police are supposed to do. We shouldn't be asking them to do that. We should be going after runaway inequality and not going after low-income people. I'm very impressed by those questions from the caller. And again,
yeah,
George,
good.
It proves to me that the American people could be fantastic economics educators if we just gave them the material to run with.
Les, as we've been talking about during this entire program, these are sharp people. They know, they understand. And, I always love to use my Howard Beale from the movie Network line, where he just says, leave us alone. We're as mad as hell. We're not going to take it anymore. Just give us our telly and our toasters and our tires and leave us alone. That's what people want. And they just want to enjoy themselves. You know what? I like sports. I'm not a fanatic by any means, but, I'm a kid from Detroit, and so I love my Detroit Lions and Tigers and Red Wings and Pistons. And when you watch a game on television and you look at the stadium full of people, 50,000 people, 60,000 people, University of Michigan, 70,000 people, all they want is to have a good time, Les. You know what? They want to go home and make their car payment and make their mortgage payment and just enjoy their life. And I keep harping back to this. When is government going to get this? When are they going to understand that the
when
key
we
to
get
happiness?
Them to under- yeah, when we get them to understand it, and that the way to get from here to there is we need a starting with an education movement where we can get on the same page, build a common platform, and then build the kind of political civic engagement to move these people. We have to wean the political system from Wall Street. The American people know something's wrong there. They don't. They suspect it's a lot worse than they think it is, and they're right. 844-1 as a ratio between the CEO and the average worker is unacceptable. So I'm hoping to put a couple of logs on that fire. I'd love to, I wish I could give the book away. We're just trying to get it out there. It's the kind of thing that people can educate their families, their neighbors, their PTAs, and we can get something going, George, because I believe we can. People are not going to sit still for this anymore.
Before we go to final callers, why don't you tell us where we can get the book?
Well, you can get it from our service at runawayinequality.org. will provide free shipping. You can also get it at any of the online. If you want an ebook, you can get it at Apple, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can get the book at any of the online stores, and you should be able to get it in your local bookstore. If not, ask for it, because it's being distributed by Chelsea Green Publishers. It should be, and our website will handle it right away, runawayinequality.org. You'll get it hopefully in a few days.
It's Carlos's turn now in Carson, California. Carlos, you're up.
Yes, good evening. Well, you know, the financial elite have a history of facilitating credit, causing inflation, and, of course, as a consequent depression that comes out of that. And when the depression sets in, they got the elite come in and gobble up everything, all the assets that they've been doing. This is, in fact, the War of 1812 was about that practice. And they've been doing this ever since. 1929, they did the same thing. 1990s, they did the same thing. 2008, they did the same thing by facilitating all these derivatives that were sold all over the world and got all the governments of Europe and ourselves in financial trouble. And, of course, I hear rumors that they continue the same practices and that we got another economic crisis coming up in a couple of years. I want to ask the guest, Les, is it Les, I'm sorry?
It's Les.
If he knows anything about that.
Well, I know something about the financial history that you're describing, and you're onto something, except there's one little addition I'd like to make. After the 1929 crash, we put our foot on the neck of Wall Street, and we created financial stability basically from the 1930s, end of the 1930s, all the way to 1975 or so, or 78, roughly that period. Wall Street was incredibly constrained, and we had there were no crashes during that period. Yeah, there were recessions and ups and downs, but there were no financial crashes anywhere in the world except one in Brazil. Since we deregulated, there have been 189, and the last one was a humdinger. And the caller's right; there could be another one in our future. But that we had the system under control, and we let the genie out of the bottle. And we have to get that system back under control. You know, from World War II to 1980, there was no premium for working on Wall Street. The wages on Wall Street and the wages in General Motors and a bank were the same, based on your education, your skill, et cetera. Once we deregulated Wall Street, their incomes went through the roof, and the non-financial sector stagnated. So we don't just have to let it go boom and bust on us. We can actually smooth it out, but we need to get control over Wall Street. And that's what this book, Runaway Inequality, is about. And your caller again proves that the American people are highly educated on these issues, and they just need a little more information, and they can put the story together and share it.
Les, let's take a few more calls, and then the clock's going to get us. And thank you for spending some time with us.
It's my pleasure. Are you kidding? This is, great show. Thanks so much for having me.
Let's go to Vancouver, Canada. Jesse's with us now on the international line. Jesse, welcome to the program.
Thank you, George. By the way, if your Insiders Club went all the way to January 2003 when you started hosting, I'll join tomorrow because I would use the programs for research. In 1 minute each, I'll try explaining why Tobin text doesn't work. George, if you went to Wikipedia, there's item number 3. It was tried in Sweden, and there's a very easy to understand reason. Nowadays, shares are listed on numerous exchanges. So, for example, it may be listed on New York, London, Toronto. They'll just bypass the tax by going to some other exchange, and it cannot be implemented. And it was tried in January 1984 in Sweden for about 2 or 3 years. They fiddled around with it, and they just gave up. Because basically what happens is the transactions which have to be taxed under Tobin tax, they just move to another exchange. There is another tax, by the way, since the time is limited, where you get a guest to come quite often on your program, and he misguidedly calls it fair tax, where there is a consumption tax or sales tax and no income tax at all.
Oh, the fair tax.
A very good example right now in the States. Washington doesn't have any income tax, and Oregon has a sales tax. So people make money in Vancouver, Washington, and they just go across the straight line and spend all their money there because there's no sales tax.
That's right.
And that doesn't work either. What will happen in fair tax, which is not fair at all, people will make their money in the States, and they'll go to some other country and spend it there, buy their yachts overseas, and you get that guest to come quite often on your program.
Yeah, he comes up on tax time all the time. Bill Spillane you're talking about.
I see, okay.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Well, look, go ahead, Les. We've powerful. Got 40 seconds.
Okay. Well, you know, England has a tax on, has had it for many, many years, a successful tax on stock. So I respectfully disagree with the caller that we can't have a financial transaction tax. 11 countries in Europe are planning to institute it as we speak. Anyway, my last message to people is get information. I think Runaway Inequality, the book, will help you get it. Try to go out there, educate other people. Let's build something together. Let's try to create the kind of country that we think is fair and just to its people. We don't need to have runaway inequality, and it's something we can really think about over this holiday season. And I just thank everybody for the knowledge they bring to the table already. I just want to add a little bit more facts and analysis to it, and let's see if we can really make this country move in a fair direction.
Les,
so
have a great holiday, you and your family. We shall be back with more on Coast to Coast AM and Winfrey talking about channeled messages.